Hello, and welcome to the Community IT Innovators Technology Topics Podcast, where we discuss nonprofit technology, cybersecurity, tech project implementation, strategic planning, and nonprofit IT careers. Find us at communityit.com.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the Nonprofit Learning Lab for today's workshop.
Thank you very much for joining us for this webinar today. We're really excited to be talking to you about how you can grow your nonprofit with Google Workspace. So my name is Johan Hammerstrom. I'm the CEO at Community IT. I've been with the company for almost 25 years now, and during that time have worked with hundreds of nonprofit organizations on helping them to use technology to effectively do their work and accomplish their mission. And I'm very excited to be here today to tell you a little bit more about our experiences with Google Workspace.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Carolyn Woodard. I am the Outreach Director for Community IT. And before I was at Community IT, I was the IT Director for a large international nonprofit. So I'm going to put that hat on today and ask Johan some of the questions. I'm going to channel all of you all and ask Johan some of the questions about using Google Workspace.
So let's talk. We'd like to start by just going over the learning objectives for today's presentation. So we want to convey some of the typical IT concerns that growing nonprofits have. Hopefully, you'll learn sort of the strengths of the Google Workspace platform, particularly for nonprofit organizations, and especially compared with the Microsoft platform. We'd like you to come away with an understanding of the evolving security needs, especially in this day and age as the threat landscape, as we call it, continues to evolve and change. And then finally, we hope you come away with steps that you can take now to administer Google Workspace, things that you can do in administering your Google Workspace now that'll prevent headaches down the road. So, an ounce of prevention and all that. So those are our learning objectives today. And we're going to really focus here on Google Workspace. But before we get to that, just wanted to talk a little bit about IT maturity. IT maturity is a useful way of drawing a connection between the capabilities that an organization has and the interest the organization has in executing on certain strategic objectives. The maturity model was first developed, actually, goes all the way back to 1973, was first developed by a Harvard Business School professor named Richard Lander. And it was later adopted by the Strategic Engineering Institute. And they were commissioned by the US Air Force to try to understand why so many IT projects were failing. And so they ended up settling on the capability maturity model, which was one of the first maturity models that was developed. There are now dozens of different maturity models. And if you're a larger organization, it might make sense for you to look into adopting a maturity model in more detail. So I'm just going to walk through each of the different stages here. And the first stage, ad hoc, is where organizations are being very reactive and just responding in the moment to needs as they arise without really giving a whole lot of thought to the long-term outcomes, or impacts of the technology that's being deployed. So it's very break-fix. There's always a lot of fires to put out. And in an ad hoc stage, organizations are highly dependent on individuals to kind of come in and save the day. Moving up into the functional stage, organizations are starting to make some investment in people, process, and technology solutions. They're starting to incorporate long-term planning considerations into IT implementation. And they're depending less and less on individuals and more on teams that are being guided by policy and process. And functional leads into standardized. And standardized is really sort of our goal for all organizations. That is kind of no matter what size or mission you have, a standardized approach to technology is one that is going to work best is going to put you in the position to succeed with your IT. And so in a standardized organization, the processes are well developed. They're being followed by the group, individual, team, or department that's responsible for IT in the organization. And long-term planning objectives are incorporated into the IT solutions that are being implemented. From standardized, you know, looking at optimized and adaptive as stages 4 and 5, organizations really need to think about whether or not those stages are appropriate for the work that they're doing as an organization. So I just want to encourage you to not look at the maturity model and think, well, stage 5, that's the highest stage, that must be our long-term objective, because it can be very expensive to get your organization to stage 5. That involves investing in a lot of policy and process development. It involves in a very rigorous and methodical approach to technology that can also be very costly, very time consuming. And that may not be necessary for your organization, depending on your mission, depending on the work that you're doing. So an organization that's very data driven, an organization, a nonprofit that is using technology to deliver its mission might need to go to stage 4 or stage 5. But other organizations that don't have the same intensity of technology requirements, you know, may be fine with standardized. So as we start to turn our attention to Google Workspace, we'll want to think about implementing Google Workspace in this context. And so if you're a brand new organization or an organization that's been, you know, working from an ad hoc, you know, perspective for a long time, you still need email, you still need documents. You know, you can't avoid rolling out IT, but understanding where you are on the maturity scale in this maturity model gives you a sense of how much you need to be able to do. So the other nice thing about the maturity model is it's a nice reality check. So if you're an organization that's operating from an ad hoc position, you know, that it's, you want to set your objectives for implementing a new technology like Google Workspace that are realistic to what your organization can accomplish.
Thank you for saying that, Johanna. I was just going to jump in as well to say that I think having that self-awareness is what we're trying to get at. It's not, you know, a judgment of if you're not at a standardized level, then you're not able to function, because there are lots of organizations that are doing a really good job. We just like to talk about it as, you know, like ideally you would like to get your organization to that standardized level, and you can use Google Workspace to get there.
Yeah, honesty is the most important part of using the maturity model. So Google Workspace is a technology solution that can be implemented effectively at every stage of maturity. And it's just important for you to realize what stage of maturity you are at. So Google Workspace is Google's business suite. Many of you are familiar with it. It's been rebranded several times over the years. I think the one that I often hear is G Suite. So if you remember the days of G Suite, it's basically the same thing. It's just a different name. And so Google is providing for business customers all of the wide range of cloud-based services that Google has. So you can use Gmail. Many of us use Gmail for our personal email, but Google provides that for business use through Google Workspace. Same with Calendar. Same with Docs, which are for documents. Drive to store files in. Forms, which can be used to run surveys. Google Meet, which is kind of the forgotten, you know, third tenor of the virtual meeting world. So everyone's familiar with Zoom, obviously. And many of you have probably used Microsoft Teams, have probably been on a Teams meeting. But Google has its own video conferencing solution called Google Meet, which runs completely in the browser and is actually pretty good. I don't know if anybody's had, you know, if you haven't experienced Google Meet, it's very googly. It's just very different from Zoom and Teams, but it works really well. Sheets, which is their version of Microsoft Excel. Sites, which is kind of can be used to build websites, I wouldn't recommend building your public-facing website with Google Sites, but you can use it to build. Generally, it gets used for building internal sites like intranets. Slides, which is used for presentations, much like PowerPoint. Google Groups, which is a way of organizing your staff. It's kind of like Microsoft Teams, for those of you who are familiar with that. Like, you can create groups of people and they have like a shared workspace that they can work from. So those 10 applications that I just ran through are sort of the core applications that come with Google Workspace, but there's a whole host of other applications as well that are related. So one of those is analytics. So if you're, you have to plug that into your website, but you can use it to analyze the traffic, the web traffic for your website. YouTube, obviously, we're all familiar with. And it actually, there's actually a YouTube offering in Google Workspace so that your organization can run its own YouTube channel. Google Voice is a telephony solution. And then Gemini is Google's AI solution, much like Copilot, which I think people have been hearing about. There are other solutions as well. In fact, last night, my wife was asking about, like, Microsoft has a business intelligence solution called Power BI, which you can use to create data visualizations. And she was like, does Google have one? Because one of her clients that she's working with, all of their data is in Google Sheets. And I was like, I don't know, that's a good question. And I Googled it, and sure enough, they have one. It's called Looker, which I think is just a hilarious name. They'll probably change the name 3 or 4 times. But it just kind of goes to show that if you want to do something, like if there's something that is in the Microsoft suite, like Power BI, there's probably also a version of it in the Google suite, like Looker for Google Workspace. So Google has put a lot of work into creating parity, at least functionally, with on a broad level with Microsoft's 365 suite. So let's talk a little bit about Google Workspace's role in the nonprofit sector. So Google provides pricing for nonprofit organizations. In fact, it provides some deep discounts for nonprofit organizations. And Google Workspace is can be a really good solution for nonprofits. For one thing, it's very easy to start up and administer. To some degree, that means it has less granular functionality than Microsoft 365, but it's easier to use. So if you're a small startup nonprofit that just needs to get going, Google Workspace can be, you know, pretty easy to get going and fairly easy to administer, even by someone who doesn't have a lot of technical background or experience. Another advantage of Google Workspace for nonprofits is that most schools now use, and universities even, use Google Workspace. And so most people are familiar with Google Workspace, either from using it in school or from using it at home. And we actually have a lot of our clients that do work in the education space, and they find that they, even if they're using Microsoft 365 as their main productivity suite, they find that they need to use Google for working with students, for example, because students are just much more familiar with Google Workspace. As I mentioned, Google offers some nonprofit pricing. There's a free tier. I think this is a good thing to keep in mind, is that it's not all free. So there are different tiers of service that Google provides for Google Workspace. The entry-level tier is free for nonprofit organizations, but you can also get more functionality with paid tiers that are deeply discounted. So they have a business standard tier. That's $3 a month per account that's on that tier. That's close to 80% discount from the commercial price. They have a business plus tier, which is just under $5, just over $5 a month, close to 75% discount of commercial price. And then if you need enterprise, that's going to be a custom. You have to contact them to get that pricing. And this chart shows you sort of the difference between the different tiers. So for example, with the Google Meet video, if you're hosting a Google Meet video, you can only have 100 participants, which seems like a lot for a virtual meeting. But if you're using that to run, you know, to convene a training, for example, with hundreds of people, just good to know that there's a limit on how many people can join a Google Meet if you're hosting it with a license from that pricing tier. In our experience, the entry-level tier generally meets the needs of most organizations, and it's not really necessary to go up to the higher tiers, but it's good to be aware that that's an option if you need it. It's also important to note that the first three tiers, the nonprofit, Business Standard, and Business Plus, have a maximum of 2,000 users. So you can't, if you, for whatever reason, are a large nonprofit organization, or you have a lot of, you're going to add a lot of accounts, maybe for constituents that you serve, do be mindful of that 2,000 user limit.
Johan, can I just jump in and say, so when you're first starting up Google Workspace, you might start with that free tier. But what you were just saying is that for most nonprofits, as they mature and add staff and get bigger, they probably will only need that first paid tier. Is that what you meant?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I know that we recommend that a lot. Like, there are just a lot of features to that that you're going to get that you won't get on the free version.
Yeah. So just to highlight some differences between personal Google and professional Google, and I think the take-home message on this slide, I'll get into the details. The take-home message is that some people who are familiar with personal Google, think that it's not really professional. And it's not really that if you try to run your nonprofit organization on a Google Workspace, people aren't going to take you seriously. They're going to think that you're trying to do it, you know, with free tools. Kind of like back in the day, like people would use AOL.com email addresses for, their main email address for their business or their organization. But the reality is that once you sign up for a Google Workspace tenant, the fact that you're using Google is somewhat invisible to the outside world. And so when you sign up for a Google Workspace tenant for your organization, the email is coming not from gmail.com, but from your organization's domain name. And so it's getting sent as if, you know, by the organization. There are no ads in the Gmail. In the email interface when you log into your Google Workspace as part of your nonprofit organization. Part of the reason that people feel that Google is not as professional is that Google is kind of well known as a consumer-focused search tool, and that these office tools were added later on. And so it's sort of seen as kind of a secondary part of their business. But the reality is they've done a really good job of building out a fully functional suite of professional business tools. And lots of businesses and even large nonprofit organizations use Google Workspace to run their business. This is particularly true in Silicon Valley, where a lot of startups tend to gravitate towards Google rather than Microsoft for their productivity suite. And then finally, as I kind of alluded to earlier, personal Google. So when you sign up for Gmail, when you're using Google Docs or Google Sheets, like all of that data, your emails, the content of your emails, that's all going into Google's massive data. I don't even know what to call it. I mean, data warehouse seems to not quite give it justice. It's huge data collection effort happening at Google, and they use that data basically to run their ad business. And so Google makes money from selling ads, and they target those ads based on the data that they're collecting from a wide range of sources, primarily search, also in their browser, the websites that you visit, also in your Gmail, the content of your emails. So all of that is kind of going into Google's data collection effort. That's true on the personal side, not true on the professional side. So if you are using Google Workspace for your organization, all of the content of your email remains the property of your organization. It's not being used by Google to run their ad business. So it's important to note that distinction. And I think it's also important that if you decide to use Google for your organization, that you do go to this step of setting up a Google Workspace tenant, and that you don't just start creating personal, you know, at gmail.com accounts and try to use those to run your organization.
That makes a lot of sense, Johan. I know that in this webinar, we really wanted to focus on Google Workspace, but I know that a lot of people have questions about the differences between using Google Workspace and using the Microsoft suite of products.
It's important to note, as I mentioned before, that both Google Workspace and Microsoft 365 are solid platforms. Among the 200 or so nonprofits that we support, I would say two-thirds use Microsoft 365 and a third use Google Workspace, especially newer and smaller nonprofit organizations, and organizations that are involved in the education space tend to gravitate a little bit more towards Google Workspace. It is important to make an intentional decision from the beginning. So it's not, you're going to cause yourself a lot of pain if you start with one and then switch to the other. Although increasingly we're seeing organizations that use both. And so that's could be an acceptable strategy. But I think if you're a new organization looking to make this decision about which platform to use, I would encourage you to think about your organization over the next 2 to 5 years. How large do you think the organization is going to be? What types of staff are you going to be hiring? Are they more likely to need the kind of document support that is provided in Microsoft 365? Are they more likely to use the kind of document support that's provided by Google Workspace? So just give that as much thought as you can so that when you make that decision, you're making a decision that will hopefully last for the life of the organization. It's not impossible to switch, but switching definitely involves, like, the migration path is not entirely straightforward. Google, the way that Google handles email, for example, is very different from how Microsoft handles it. And so even just migrating your email involves a lot of retraining of staff. It involves a lot of data cleaning. It ends up being pretty expensive. So don't get paralyzed, you know, into thinking, oh, if I make the wrong decision, that's it for this organization. It is possible to change, but just make sure that you're really making a thoughtful decision about which is going to be the best solution long term. We have some updates to pass along. Google recently updated its storage limit. So previously they had allowed 30 gigabytes per person, and that was it. Like, once you've kind of used up your 30 gigabytes, you ran out of space, or you had to purchase more space or increase the license tier in order to get more space. But Google recently switched to 100 terabytes for nonprofit organizations. So if you have any nonprofit licenses at all in your Google Workspace, you get 100 terabytes of storage capacity for the entire organization, which we found to be pretty significant. So some of the previous concerns that you may have heard about around Google storage have been addressed through that. And, like, for example, something that organizations used to do is just add a bunch of dummy accounts. So those additional accounts sort of increase their total storage capacity. You no longer need to do that. And then Microsoft, one of the things to keep in mind about Microsoft is that it's constantly changing its pricing model and its licensing model. So, for example, they had previously offered a license called E2, Enterprise E2, which was free for nonprofit organizations. They recently discontinued that license and replaced it with Business Basic, which is also free, but works a little bit different from Enterprise E2. We have a lot more information about on both of these topics in our webinar series, Community IT webinar series.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in to say that, Johanna, as well, that, this webinar, we can only touch on some of these things, but we have a couple of articles on our website that go into more detail on both the Google storage and the Microsoft discount. So if you're feeling a little lost, we have more resources on that on our website, which is communityit.com. And we do have other webinars as well, free webinar videos that cover some of these topics also. So go ahead and check out those free resources.
So let's talk a little bit about cybersecurity and how cybersecurity is handled in Google Workspace. So cybersecurity is something that every nonprofit organization should be mindful of. I don't want to say concerned about, although it's definitely an area of concern. The threat landscape, as I mentioned earlier, continues to evolve, and there are a lot of threats facing nonprofit organizations in the area of cybersecurity. One of the ways that this is experienced most directly is when organizations go to apply for a cybersecurity liability policy from their insurance carrier. 5 or 6 years ago, it was possible to have cybersecurity included as part of your general liability insurance policy. That is no longer really an option. There may be a few carriers that still offer that, but it's pretty rare. And in our experience, especially for larger organizations, in order for you to get adequate cybersecurity coverage against cybersecurity risk, you need to have a specific cybersecurity policy from your insurance provider. And obtaining that policy is going to require you to complete a much more involved application than was previously needed. So again, 5 or 6 years ago, a cybersecurity addition rider to a general liability policy might have involved like a half page application where you just answer a few brief questions. And what we're seeing now is much more involved, 7-8 page long questionnaires. Sometimes the questionnaires are handled through, need to be completed online. They can involve up to 100 questions, and the questions are all related to the protections that the organization has in place related to cybersecurity risk. And so understanding how your platform, your software applications, the different protections that they offer is really important, because when it comes time to renew your cyber liability policy, you'll need to fill out the application and attest to the different cybersecurity protections that you have in place. The takeaway here is that Google Workspace is a very secure solution. And so if you're concerned about security, either for specific reasons because of the work that your organization does, or just for general reasons because of all of the cyber threats that are out there now, because you want to make sure that you're able to get your cyber liability insurance renewed. Just want to tell you that Google Workspace can be secured as much as Microsoft 365 can. It does need to be, the policies for securing Google Workspace need to be implemented at the administration level. So when you're setting up Google Workspace for the first time, don't just assume that out of the box, it is as secure as it needs to be. Don't just assume out of the box that Google Workspace is secure in a way that complies with your cyber liability requirements. Those things need to be proactively set up in user administration. So just be aware of that. And we also strongly recommend user training. And there's some training resources that Google provides in Google Workspace, but in general, that's an area where you're probably better off using a third-party solution for your training.
I think that's also useful, Johan. I mean, we always say that you can use any system insecurely, So that's where it really comes into making sure that you're, as you're growing and as everyone is using Google Workspace, that all of your staff know, you know, like not to share their passwords, and just some basic things like that, that you just need to make sure that you're doing that training.
Absolutely. Yeah. The training is critical. You can have all the security protections in the world, and if your staff aren't trained, it really won't matter at all. So training is the most important part of a effective cybersecurity posture.
So we have some questions that we get fairly often from our clients and from other webinars that we do. And I think one of the big ones is this question of, should you discourage use of Outlook? Like if you have part of your staff that wants to use Microsoft and part that wants to use Google Workspace, what do we usually recommend for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So these are some of the questions that have come up over the years as we worked with organizations on implementing Google Workspace. You have a lot of, you know, modern workers that are used to Outlook and are very productive in Outlook and want to use Outlook. And you have other workers who are used to the Gmail interface and want to use that and feel very productive in that. And oftentimes when organizations, you know, are trying to make this decision between these two solutions or thinking about switching from one to the other, it's because they have some staff who are very vocal and dislike the system that they currently have. And so organizations will try to thread the needle by letting their staff, let's say an organization has Google Workspace, but they have staff who are much more productive in Outlook. You can try to accommodate that situation by using a special, by basically setting Outlook up to synchronize with the Google email. So it's possible. You can configure Outlook to work with Gmail, but it's not recommended. We don't recommend it. We do discourage the use of Outlook to check Gmail. They're two fundamentally different systems in terms of their philosophy, if you will, around email. Labels and folders, for example. Google Workspace uses labels. Emails get labeled. You can apply multiple labels to an email. Outlook has folders. You can put the email in one folder and only one folder. So those two approaches are fundamentally incompatible. And so that's just one example. There's many, many others. And basically, when you try to use Outlook to access and manage your Gmail, you're going to run into issues because you're going to run into conflicts that come from those fundamentally different philosophies around what email is and how email should be managed. So it's tough. This is kind of tough medicine, but I would say, you know, your staff who miss the system that they're more productive in, they just need to learn how to use the other system to do their work. And I think I kind of look at it similar to an enterprise software package. So when, you know, your organization may have, you know, you may use Salesforce to manage your CRM. You may use a proprietary database system for case management. If you're in a school, you may have a student information system. When you hire someone to come work at your organization, the expectation is that they're going to learn how to use that system. Someone doesn't come into a school having worked with a different student information system and say, well, I really like that other system, and that's what I'd like to be using instead of this one. You kind of have to look at your productivity platform in the same way. That can be a very difficult conversation to have, I understand, if we're talking about an executive leader like the CEO. There's no like easy ways around that. You may find yourself in a position where, your CEO is going to use Outlook to check their Gmail. That just may be the reality. But just be aware, and they should be aware, that that is not ideal. And that
it's more complicated. I think, though, that one of the great things about, and hopefully some of the people in this webinar are in the situation of having started as a startup nonprofit with the free Google Workspace suite. And then, you know, that's what you're in as you're growing. So hopefully that, for your organization, if you've always been in Google, that answers your question of you can stick with Google as you're growing. So what are Google shared drives and how do you use them in Google?
So this question kind of speaks to sort of the nature of Google Workspace. And again, like a lot of it's driven by Google's philosophy. And I know that sounds kind of abstract, but it's true. So originally when Google set up, you know, its document management system, Google Docs, Google Sheets, there was the document belonged to, was owned by the person who created the document. So there were no shared documents. I mean, you could share documents, but they weren't owned. They were always owned by an individual. So let's say you're a small organization and you have a communications director, and they started creating all of these different files, you know, presentations, you know, communication collateral, et cetera. In Google Workspace, they're just creating that in their Google Drive. They can share it with other people. And because of how Google sets that up, it may look like it's in like a third party location that anybody can access. But then that person leaves, their account gets disabled, and suddenly all of those documents are no longer available. So this was a huge problem that organizations were having, where, because most organizations depend on having documents that are in a, you know, quote unquote, third party location that are owned not by any one individual, but by the organization itself and administered by the organization itself. So for years, this was just not possible in Google. And so there, you know, you had to have all these workarounds when someone who was important, who created all these documents, left the organization. You had to jump through a lot of hoops to make sure that their documents were still available. And Google finally, within the last few years, developed a solution called Google Shared Drives, which is basically kind of their version of the shared document libraries in Microsoft SharePoint. So you can create a shared drive. You can, you know, create Google Docs and Google Sheets in it. You can upload, you know, documents that have been created in Microsoft's document solution into it. And it's not owned by any one individual. It's owned and administered by the organization as a whole. And so it does require, it's the best practice is for organization to kind of think about what shared drives do we need to create. Typically, you'd have different departments would have their own shared drives, like one for the finance team, one for a program team, and then one for the development team. And then you'd have the administrator create those shared drives and then assign permissions to them to the appropriate groups.
I think that touches on to something we've kind of, I guess, touched on, but not really talked about yet, which is that because you can set up the free version of Google Workspace so easily as a non-IT person even, and then as you move into having more complex IT needs, you really need to have an administrator and use the administration more. And that can be kind of a challenge as you go through that. And I think our next question kind of touches on that too. So for the Google Shared Drives, you want to have somebody in a position of authority kind of deciding which teams have these shared drives set up for them and what that architecture looks like. Also for offboarding users, we talked about it a little bit earlier, Johan. And in fact, you mentioned that, you know, if you have, it used to be that you would create these dummy accounts, like quote unquote emails that weren't for anyone. So you'd have more storage, but actually also you get charged for each of those accounts. So it's not only important from a security standpoint to have, you know, if somebody has left your organization, you deactivate their Google account with you, but also, you know, just in terms of your costs. So can you talk about that a little bit?
The advantage of Google Workspace, especially for smaller organizations, is that it's very easy to set up. But the danger of Google Workspace is that it gets set up and then whoever set it up, you know, walks away, and then no one's maintaining or managing it over time. And that can create a lot of issues and problems. So it's really important that, and this gets back to the maturity model, that there be a person in the organization of authority who has on their job description ownership of IT, and that that person either directly or through delegation manages the Google Workspace over time. Because, you know, someone needs to be responsible for creating new accounts when new people join the organization. And it's also very important that you disable accounts when people leave the organization. We've seen lots of instances, especially with smaller organizations, where Google Workspace was set up, but then no one was, you know, given responsibility for it over time. And all of these departed staff still had active accounts in the organization's Google Workspace. In some cases, they were still accessing their work email, even though they no longer were working for the organization. So having even just kind of a basic set of processes in place for managing Google Workspace long-term is a critical part to using the solution effectively.
I feel like the next question too about the third-party backups and third-party mail filtering is another kind of a security issue, in that Google Workspace doesn't require you to back up what you're doing. And it's in the cloud, right? So it kind of backs itself up. But as a growing organization, you would want to have more ability to restore from backup than that. Is that correct?
That's right. I think, yeah. So the backups kind of gets to the question of having, you really want to have centralized administrative control over your Google Workspace. And Google has, over time, like improved the ability to do that, but it's still not as strong as the Microsoft platform. And so, you know, having a third-party solution plug into your Google Workspace can be helpful if you have a situation where you have a disgruntled employee, they could delete all of their email and then permanently delete it. And if they had the right level of access, delete it beyond recovery. Or someone could delete it and then, you know, 5 or 6 months later, realize there's a critical piece of grant information that only went to this person. And now their mailbox has been deleted because they left 5 months ago, and there's no way to recover it at that point. So third-party backup solutions are really helpful in those situations. They ensure that the organization has point-in-time access to all of the data that's being stored and created in Google Workspace over a time frame that they control. Google doesn't give you control over retention, for example, and in the same way that a third-party backup solution can.
One of the questions that we get a lot that kind of relates back to this, like who's in charge of your Google Workspace, is governance best practices and policies that you might need to manage your Google Workspace.
Well, I think the most basic like governance best practice is that somebody needs to own IT in the organization. Like there needs to be a clear ownership of IT. It needs to be part of somebody's job description, and it needs to report up to senior leadership. So typically it's whoever's in charge of operations. Sometimes it'll be finance, but I think nowadays it's more common that it's the top operational leader in the organization is, you know, sort of at least nominally in charge of IT. And then they should be, you know, supervising the person who is directly or indirectly the person who is managing IT. So that's one of the most important, you know, best practices around governance. In terms of policies, we'd recommend, you know, acceptable use policy, of which there are many examples out there on the internet, is important to have, just outlining for staff, you know, what is acceptable for them to do with their computers and what and their IT systems and what the expectations are for them around the use of those systems. It's also important to have to make sure that security is part of that policy, and security policies can include sort of the controls that are put in place for monitoring risk levels and preventing risk levels. And then, of course, now AI is something that's becoming you know, front of mind for a lot of people. And that can be either baked into your acceptable use policy, or it can be set up as its own standalone policy.
And I want to put in a quick plug that next month in May, Community IT will be having a webinar on governance and policy documents that you might need. So you can check that out. It's a free webinar, so you can sign up for that on our website. We also have an AI acceptable use policy, so I'll put that link in the chat. I think we already spoke about Google Groups, so I'm not going to revisit that. What about device management using Google Workspace? Is that difficult? Is that something that people need to worry about?
It's not great. I mean, I think the basically like device management applies to Chromebooks and Android devices. We would definitely not recommend using the Google Workspaces device management tools to manage Windows, Macs, iPads, or iPhones. We haven't done a lot with it. I've heard it's somewhat basic, and that if you really want to manage Chromebooks or Android devices effectively, that it's worth looking at third-party solutions. But generally, since most organizations are using Macs or Windows, we found that either a third-party solution or Microsoft's Endpoint Manager tends to work better for managing devices.
And that makes sense. And that's, again, a question, like, as you're getting bigger and have people with device, more and more people with devices that you need to, they're using for work, so you need to manage them. Here's a good question. So what is 2SV, which I hadn't seen that acronym before, although I have seen MFA, which is the multi-factor authentication. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I'll try to summarize this briefly. This could probably be its own webinar. 2SV stands for two-step verification. Now, if you go to Google's website, their support site, they say 2SV, two-step verification, also known as MFA. So they, and their support site, basically say that they're the same thing. They're not the same thing. MFA is a subset of 2SV. So 2SV, two-step verification, means you need to do two things to verify your identity to gain access to your email or any other resources. The first thing that you use to verify your identity is almost always a password. So you enter your username and password. That's the first step. And then the second step is some other form of verification. Now, multi-factor authentication is a subset of what that second step is. And so the multi-factor could be a code that you have on your phone. You enter that code in, and that's the second step. And now you've been authenticated onto the system. But a second step could also be something you know, which is the same factor that you, you know, a password is something that you know. And then if they ask you a question like, what was the name of your, you know, first teacher in second grade? That's not a second factor. That's also something you know. It's a knowledge factor. And it is a two-step process to verify, but it's using the same type of factor, knowledge factors, which are more compromisable. So I don't have enough time to go into all the details of this. Long story short, you should definitely implement 2SV for all of your accounts, and you should make sure that the second step of the two-step verification is a possession factor. So that's a text message that's getting sent to your phone, or preferably the Google Authenticator app running on your phone and using the code that's coming out of that app. So there's a whole rabbit hole around all of this, and Google's implementation of it, unfortunately, is somewhat confusing. But the quick answer is definitely implement 2SV and, you know, set up the policy in such a way that the second V is a multi-factor authentication.
Well, and I think that, I mean, I use the Google Authenticator for most of my accounts, you know, social media and even personal accounts. So I think Google does make it easy to set up multi-factor authentication. I think, again, the question is just, you need to have an owner of Google Workspace that's requiring people as part of your policy to have multi-factor authentication on all of your accounts that you're using for business. And of course, it makes sense on your personal accounts too. I think we're going to have to skip, should I use Admin Center Reporting? I feel like that's also another kind of more sophisticated level of, if once you have someone who owns Google Workspace, and then they take on that admin role, then this would be something for them to investigate as how to use the reporting from the admin center. But I want to make sure if there are questions out there, Nonprofit Learning Lab, I think you were going to jump in and let us know if anyone had a question.
Thank you, Carolyn. Yes, we do have a few questions. Our first one is, I'm used to having an internal server or Dropbox to organize shared files, and I'm struggling with Google Drive and how my new org shares folders. Do you have any resources or advice on how an org can use Drive or Sites as an internal server versus individually sharing and organizing?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I think the Google Shared Drive is probably the first place to look, and it might require you to migrate files out of the Google Drive, which is owned by individuals, into the Google Shared Drive, which is something that's kind of that's administered and configured by the organization, by the administrator, of the Google Workspace. If you find that that solution doesn't meet your needs, it is possible to integrate third-party solutions like Dropbox and Box with Google Workspace. And one of the most common use cases we see for Box is for Google organizations that have Google Workspace that need a more advanced way of managing documents. They'll just set up Box and then it integrates really well with Google Workspace.
Thank you. Our next question is, how are nonprofit licenses registered in Google Workspace?
Basically, you'll need to apply for nonprofit status with Google. And then once that's approved, you can set up your Google Workspace tenant. And then once you've done that, it will you'll have access to the discounted licenses that I was showing earlier. So if you go to Google and Google Google Workspace nonprofit, it'll take you through the process of applying for the nonprofit status.
Great, thank you. We have a couple more questions. Our next one is, are there any IT security trainings that you would recommend?
So we have a number. Yes, this is going to sound very self-serving. We have a number on our website, actually. We have a really thorough webinar series that we run, and then we record and publish all of those completely free to access on our YouTube channel. Our goal is to share our knowledge with the nonprofit sector. So we have a number of webinars on our website about cybersecurity, and we actually have one about building your own cybersecurity training curriculum for your organization.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It looks like those are all of our questions.
Thank you so much. This was just a wonderful experience and opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. And thank you, Nonprofit Learning Lab, for hosting. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Johan and Carolyn. If you are interested in receiving the recordings and materials from today's free webinar, you can visit our free webinars page on the Nonprofit Learning Lab website, or you can send us an email at program@nonprofitlearninglab.org. Thank you so much for participating. And again, thank you, Johan and Carolyn, for educating our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Community IT does these free webinars and podcasts for our community, and we love sharing our knowledge and experience. If you have more questions or are having trouble with your IT at your nonprofit, please get in touch with us on our website, www.communityit.com, so we can start a conversation or schedule an assessment. Downloading any of our free resources there will get you signed up for our webinar reminders, and you can attend our next webinar in real time and ask our experts your own questions. If you love podcasts, please subscribe and leave us a rating to help others find this leadership resource for nonprofits.